remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Hello there, children.
Hey, hey, kids.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Annie Goodman and Matthew Sachs.
Woohoo!
Not that there's anything wrong with us.
Because he has a lot of chip stuff.
All right.
Monday, October 6th, and welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adult cancer. I'm your co-host, Matthew Zachary, a proud 18-year young adult survivor of brain cancer. My fabulous co-host, Annie Goodman, is off for the evening. She is a journalist and young adult breast cancer fighter. We are your hosts for the Stupid Cancer Show. It's not okay that 72,000 young adults are diagnosed with cancer each and every year. So, got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Time to get busy living, folks, because the Stupid Cancer Show is changing the world, one chemo infusion at a time.
I'm Kenny Kane, co-founder of Stupid Cancer, welcoming all of our first-time and returning listeners on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, iHeartRadio Talk, or listen to the archives on stupidcancershow.org.
Tonight's show is all about Pinktober and breast cancer action. It is October, which is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. All across the world is changing pink. We'll be joined tonight by our friends from Breast Cancer Action, a national grassroots education and advocacy organization fighting to achieve health justice for all women at risk and living with breast cancer. Joining us will be Dr. Angela Wall, who's their communications director, and Annie Sarter, who's in charge of policy and campaign coordination. And our Survivor Spotlight on Sephora Razor, all returning champions. Also, we are not live tweeting tonight, but if we were, we would be broadcasting from @chemodeck using the hashtag SCRadio. So feel free to tweet on our behalf tonight. And our fabulous Maureen Tweed is also enjoying the heat of Southern California. So it is time for the show.
We're giving Twitter a break for the night.
Yeah, poor Twitter.
Their servers.
Yes, welcome to all of our guests and our listeners here on tonight's show. Yes, we are always thrilled to turn pink for October, but in the best kind of way, by poking a stick at the ridiculousness that it has become. Up until recently, apparently, we had a website called pinknausea.org, but it was a repository of people to post photos of erroneously ridiculous pink products, which really had no thoughts or bearing in reality. And we totally respect the need for awareness months, and the amount of attention breast cancer gets clearly has made a significant difference. But, you know, there's a certain gray area, I suppose, where you can toe the line between audacity and just plain ridiculousness. And once you get the pink porta potties, I think you kind of have to call a spade and say, this is just not okay. But we would invite anyone who thinks this is an equally ridiculous thing to post ridiculous things on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/stupidcancer. We'd love to see what you guys think are the most ridiculous products of Pink Nausea 2014. Right? That's the year, 2014?
That's, yes. That's the one we're in. And I'm finding myself doing that where I can't commit to writing 2015
right
on future things. And it's just going to be 2014 again.
Well, for anyone in the audience born in the 70s and raised in the 80s, Back to the Future Part 2 takes place in the year 2015. So it's kind of freaky that we all saw that movie, and next year is the year that that movie took place in.
I think it means you're old.
I am old. This is totally an old person thing.
Yes.
Completely and entirely an old person thing.
Yep.
So anyway, what has been your interesting observations? I've just been trolling the interwebs for the ridiculous backlash. We typically have breast cancer action on every year. In fact, we actually have breast cancer action on every year to talk about what they've been up to fighting the good fight. But any...
I'm wondering if it's over.
The end of pink?
Yeah. As if last year was kind of the... like the peak of the mountain, and now we're coming down where I think people are almost as equally aware of breast cancer as they are pink.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're at.
This is your first official Pinktober with us, Mal.
It is my first official Pinktober.
So you're not a survivor, thankfully. You're on the outside of the sphere a little bit. But
yes.
Up until then, what's been your experience with October as a consumer?
Preparation for all the pink.
Yeah.
And seeing lots of pink and tons of pink all over the place and buying items that were unknowingly buying items that were pink because they were pink and I like pink.
Right.
And also, if it's pink and I like the color pink, then it does something good. Why not just buy it as opposed to buying the regular item that I normally would
buy? So you are on the receiving end of all of this. You are the archetype consumer who has been taken advantage of.
I was a sheep.
Wow.
I was a sheep.
So that's the whole fiasco we're going to be discussing tonight, and apparently every broadcast this October, on how you can be really smart and intelligent, because, you know, people really don't want to write checks sometimes. They just want to feel like they're doing something, and there's nothing wrong with that. And there are truly legitimate campaigns out there to how you make a difference in breast cancer, but some of them are not really, you know, taking a dump in the pink porta potty.
They should be taking it on the pink porta potty.
Just ridiculous. I did post that on my wall recently, and it got a lot of hits and a lot of comments. It's just something that, again, I think, Kenny, you hit the nail on the head. Like, people are, maybe it hit a saturation point last year, and now people are just so aware, we've crossed the event horizon.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sci-fi movie.
I know. Anyway, so before we bring in our guest tonight, returning champion Sapporo Razor, I will be traveling tomorrow to Southern California to join our fellow staff members, Maureen Sweet and Allie Ward, at the fall conference of SAYO, S-A-Y-A-O. For those of you out there, it is the Society for Adolescent and Young Adult Oncology. And this year's conference is around ALL, which is acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And I'll just pull it up real quickly. They are having a major focus on the late effects facing all the children that survive ALL and now become teenagers, college students, young adults. They join Stupid Cancer happily alive with the consequences of cure. And this conference is really a great, I guess it's a good bridge between the pediatric world and the young adult cancer world.
Is that the direction it's headed, more of like a thematic?
It's a spectrum now. I mean, the word spectrum has a connotation to it, but it's really like this whole, there's a continuity now, there's a continuum now, where it's not pediatrics and everything else, it's pediatrics, adolescents, young adults, and then everything else. And it's a sign of the times that there's so much survival in children's cancer now. ALL is like 95% five-year free, and even brain tumors and sarcomas are doing really, really well compared to where they were when I was diagnosed in the Stone Age of 1995, but it has yielded an entirely new generation of survivors who are living with side effects from being treated. And now we can learn from what people like me have to deal with chronically and treat children better or differently, or even make them or their parents aware of what's in store for them later in life, which gets them through any chronic diseases, it gets them crossed through pre-existing condition factors. And it's a stunning shift in the way that academic research, white papers, publishing, and thought leadership is being done in oncology with oncologists, radiologists, hem-oncs, navigators, oncology nurses, oncology social workers. So everyone hop on over to SAYAO.org. That is the Society for Adolescent and Young Adult Oncology. We should be very proud. This is a huge milestone for everything we've been fighting for almost 8 years now in the young adult cancer movement. So a really big deal. So that's that. That's kind of our pink washing, pink nausea for the opening segment. But now I'm really thrilled because we're going to be welcoming back to the Stupid Cancer Show a very, very special woman. Sapporo Razor, you're up here. was initially diagnosed in 2012 with stage 3 inflammatory breast cancer, now in treatment for stage 4 metastatic inflammatory breast cancer. Upgrade! Sakura writes a blog on Huffington Post called Cancer Mess with the Wrong Bitch. Please welcome back to the Stupid Cancer Show, the one and only Sakura Razor.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome back. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. It's like you went from iOS 7 to iOS 8 of breast cancer.
Right? Yeah, I have as many kinks as it does.
I know. Well, it's great to have you back. I'm really, really thrilled. Sorry I couldn't make it in studio this year, but I hear we forgive you for calling in from Connecticut.
That's okay. I'm doing my best.
Right. So you're coming up on, you know, almost 2.5 years now, right? 2 years
yeah.
or so? So let's start from scratch. So your life as a phenomenally awesome woman in 2011 led to some interesting things that happened in 2012. Let's discuss.
My life as a phenomenally awesome woman was going just fine in 2012 and 2011. And it actually was one of the best years I've ever had as an adult. And in January 2012, I started to not feel well, and I didn't know what was up. I didn't get sick very often. I was very, very healthy. And I actually said to a friend of mine, I think this is the year I'm going to get sick, not thinking anything beyond, like, the flu or something. And I started...
Famous last...
Well, yeah. I don't have the
famous
flu.
Yeah.
Actually, the last time I was on the show, I had the flu and bronchitis. So, knock on wood, no flu this year. I think about a week into the new year in 2012, I started to notice symptoms of inflammatory breast cancer, changes in my breast, a swelling, a rash, dimply skin, inverted nipple, like classic textbook symptoms. And I had just started running again after taking a break from an injury, and I thought maybe that had something to do with it. So I went to Dr. Google, and I said, can running cause one breast to grow? And everything that came back was inflammatory breast cancer. So it was basically just like a big, you know, shining arrow pointing at me saying, you have inflammatory breast cancer. So I went to the doctor, and fortunately I had chosen a doctor that had seen inflammatory breast cancer, because a lot of doctors can go their whole careers without seeing a case of it. And my doctor knew what it was, and that's where, you know, the quote-unquote good luck stopped, because I was young, I was 30 at the time, and didn't have health insurance. I couldn't get a mammogram or an ultrasound to confirm the diagnosis. And so I had to wait 2 weeks. What?
Is that because of insurance?
Well, because I didn't have insurance, so my doctor tried to get me into places that had offered free mammograms, and no one would accept me because I was too young. Like, my doctor is on the phone. I'm sitting there in the reception area, in the waiting room, and my doctor is going, this girl has breast cancer. Like, basically, like, saying, like, you need to get her in so I can get an official diagnosis and start her on treatment. And they're like, sorry, she's too young for cancer. And it's just, like, it was mind-boggling. So I had to wait 2 weeks to finally get the mammogram and ultrasound, even though inflammatory breast cancer doesn't usually show on a mammogram, but if you are looking for it, you'll see it, I guess. So I got the mammogram and started treatment. I had the standard chemo, surgery, radiation, end of 2012. Thought I was cancer-free. I was feeling pretty good. Started off the new year on tamoxifen, which is a hormone therapy. And literally... exactly a year after my initial symptoms started, I had new symptoms. I had pain, and which led me to the doctor and to scans, which showed the cancer had spread to my sternum. So I had switched treatment at the time and switched oncologists, because my oncologist was not living up to my standards. And so was on the treatment for... until this past August, when I had scans that showed progression, and significant progression, significant enough to change my treatment again. So now I'm still on hormone therapy, but now I'm also on an oral chemo.
I want to point out one of the most interesting things that I finally think, and Kenny made a really good point during the opening, is that have we maybe reached a saturation point of breast cancer awareness to the point where people are actually paying attention to what it means now, and that there is no one breast cancer. There's like 40 different kinds of breast cancer. What is the difference mainly between inflammatory breast cancer and regular breast cancer? And then, of course, there's stage 3 breast cancer versus stage 4 breast cancer. And then we go back to my co-host, our good friend Andy Goodman, with BRCA and triple negative. There's so many almost like mathematical permutations.
Right.
Can you talk us through what you're aware of and what you know?
Inflammatory breast cancer, it's different because it has actual visible symptoms. It rarely presents with a lump. I actually had a lump, but it was a second type of breast cancer. So I really hit the jackpot, and I had two breast cancers in one breast because I'm that awesome. And it has visible symptoms, no lump, and because it doesn't present until it reaches the skin so you can actually see it, it's never, as far as I know, found before stage 3. So basically, you're already at stage 3 when you have inflammatory breast cancer.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of scary to think about. And one of the statistics, which I really don't like statistics because there's so many factors that go into them, and but the statistics say that inflammatory breast cancer is the most rare type of breast cancer, but those of us that have it are, you know, we, and the doctors too, we say it's more the most misdiagnosed because the symptoms are almost exactly the same symptoms as an infection, which a lot of women that have recently had kids or who are breastfeeding, they get mastitis, like the infections, and they write it off, their doctors write it off, and then by the time anyone realizes, hey, wait, this isn't an infection, it's already spread to stage 4 because it starts at stage 3, where else are you going to go? And so it's at stage 4, and, you know, that's it.
So technically, though, just frankly speaking, you were lucky in the sense that you were able to, I mean, it was a case where Dr. Gruhl actually yielded the right scare tactic that got you
right
to the right doctor who listened to you and got you diagnosed properly within a reasonable period of time. That's fairly uncommon.
I literally went through, I don't even know how many pages I went through to find something that might say, yes, running caused my breast to swell. But everything else, page after page after page, was inflammatory breast cancer, get to a doctor now. And so it did. I mean, it's, you know, because it has those visible symptoms, it's scary, but, you know, it's, I don't want to use the word, like, easy, but it's just, like, it's easy to see, so it's just, and I definitely don't want to use the word better, but, you know, a lump, sometimes it's just, you find it by chance. Like, Annie found hers by chance. A lot of women find theirs by chance. But this is just, like, it's literally in your face. Like, you can't get away from it. And so Dr. Gruhl saved me that one time. He's not been so great since then.
Right, agreed. So I was asking Mallory, who's here in studio, what her life was like in her perception of Breast Cancer Awareness Month before she started working for us. So you were just living your life, being a regular person. Clearly, Breast Cancer Awareness Month has been a thing for a very long time. Obviously, it means something very different to you right now, and you're very proactive in representing how the youth are reacting to it. But had you ever bought anything pink by accident, just thinking you were helping?
Honestly, like, I don't remember, you know, I feel like I've been so immersed in the cancer world for so long that I don't remember, but I do remember my very first experience with thinking how real breast cancer was when I was in high school. There was a teacher, a male teacher, who died from breast cancer, and that was the very first experience I had with it, because men get breast cancer too, and then, right, so, and they get, you know, I have a friend who, you know, he's dealing with breast cancer now, and he's getting the same treatment that women are getting. And as far as I know, men have different, you know, plumbing, as they say. So it's, I don't know, it's kind of just weird to think that, you know, they're giving him the same things. But I really don't remember Pinktober. I don't think I ever called it Pinktober before I got cancer. But now, it's always Pinktober, and it sucks. But I'm sure I must have bought things in the past, thinking either I'm not a big fan of pink, so I never really would have bought something just because it was pink. But I like to help, so I probably bought something thinking that I was helping. Now, of course, knowing that most of the stuff that's out there doesn't help in the way that we'd like it to.
Right. So let's get into that a little bit. I mean, I'm really thankful that you're calling in tonight and sharing this story, but you were an example of, you know, there's a young women with breast cancer world and there's a young adult world, and I don't conflate the two. They're all part of the same community,
mm-hmm.
but there's such a different attitude in young adults with any cancer towards ribbons and wristbands and colors and body parts, and it sort of takes away the value that you might have to someone dealing with fertility that didn't have breast cancer but another cancer. And I hate the idea of pigeonholing people based on what they have, but just your irreverence, I mean, alone, your Huffington Post blog is called Cancer Mess with the Wrong Bitch. That's a great attitude that I don't think we see a lot outside of our generation. What's been your response from the world since you started blogging?
Well, I agree. Like, the experience that I've had with, you know, older women with breast cancer, and this is just from my experience. I don't want anyone to, like, bite my head off for it. But from my experience, the older women are more, they tend to be kind of more like, woe is me. Like, I got to this point in my life, and now this happens. And then I feel like the younger people, we tend to be more pissed off. Like, really? Like, I was just starting my life, and you're going to throw this at me? And so it's kind of just more angry, but like a good angry, because it helps us fight. But, yeah, there's definitely a difference in how we react to it and how we fight it. And so to lump us all, probably shouldn't use that, in together with just one color and one ribbon, it does a disservice to so many, and not just with breast cancer, with other types of cancer, just to everyone fighting. There's just so many different layers, and to just have us all be identified by this one symbol, it's wrong.
And obviously that is a highly shared sentiment, but yet still it exists. We have to accept it. And what do you make of it these days? Do you feel like, and again, it's only technically been like 2 years for you in that sense, but again, going back to where Kenny made a really great comment at the top of the show, has it reached a saturation point? The NFL going pink porta potties, you know,
it's ridiculous.
How do you combat that? What's your attitude, or how do you communicate with your friends and family, your community, around this really disruptive take on something that we're just so used to? It's embarrassing.
I'm not good at holding back. I'm very honest, and I will tell you if something pisses me off. So, you know, when I was first diagnosed, a lot of people, I have a great support system. My friends are fabulous, but, you know, everyone brought me pink ribbons and pink this and pink that and those, like, Save the Tatas cups and everything like that. And especially since I was upgraded to stage 4, you know, they know that is not helping. You know, I tell them, you know, if you want to donate, this is the link to go to give money, you know, MetaViver and the Metastatic Breast Cancer Network, you know, give directly there, because we need money for research. We don't need to give more money to these companies that profit off of our cancer. And I think the message got through to my friends, because I actually am getting emails and Facebook messages with pictures of things, but it's more ironically. They're like, can you believe this, or get a load of this? So they're still sending it to me, but it's not like, wow, do you want this?
Wow. Yeah. My goodness. Is it offensive? I mean, it's almost comical at this point, because people send us the same things all the time anyway also.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just go back to how we launched that Crazy Pink Nausea Tumblr a while ago, just to see what it was like, the people of Walmart for breast cancer products. And it was so ridiculous to see how many different things, like,
yeah,
guns have gone pink. And, again, you can't really beat the pink water potties. I think
that water potty was hysterical, but it was offensive. And
yeah,
it does get offensive, because especially living in the cancer world, it's like, okay, so you are using, you know, it's like people people that aren't in the cancer world wait all year so they could make their product pink, just so they could highlight
right.
it and just say, oh, yeah, well, we're supporting breast cancer, but are you really? And then a lot of people are very vulnerable, or they just don't have the time or the desire to actually look into these organizations and see if they actually are supporting breast cancer.
So what were the last blog posts that you wrote about?
I wrote about metastatic breast cancer. I think my last two posts were about that, because there's a lot to say about it. What did I write about it? I know I got a lot of backlash from it. I don't remember. And all I was telling my story, and just basically just, you know, saying it can happen to anyone. You know, everything's now, it's all about early detection and mammograms and all that. And, like, yes, go get your mammogram, you know, check yourself, and early detection might lead to, you know, better survival rates and all that. But at least, like, 30% of people that are diagnosed at, like, even stage zero, stage one, at an early stage, will eventually become metastatic. And a lot of people got, like I try to talk about that, because that's awareness. You know, that's, we don't, it's not pink. I think the colors for metastatic breast cancer are like teal, and it's, you know, it's totally different, but it's not something that people want to hear about, because they don't want to think that they could be in that group. They're like, well, I found my cancer early, so I'm in the clear. And, you know, that's not how it is, not for everyone. So I talked about that, and a lot of people got really upset. And I'm like, you know, sorry, not sorry, but that's reality.
Wow. So let's take the next couple of minutes. We're going to wrap up this segment in about 2 or 3 minutes here. We are a young adult cancer organization. You are a young adult. And I think it's always relevant to continue to make the argument that cancer in young adults is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And for obvious reasons to us, but perhaps not obvious reasons to the general public. And with all the you know, just emphatic passion that you bring to the cause in general, let's talk about what is specifically unique to you as a young woman. Not a 75-year-old woman.
Yeah, right. I am definitely not a 75-year-old woman, even though I feel like it right now. My body definitely feels like it.
It does.
Like what I was saying before, how like with younger people, we tend to be more, maybe angry wasn't the right word to use. We tend to be more feisty, I guess. And, you know, I think for me, like I took my diagnosis and my treatment and all the effects, and I'm trying to turn it around, and I'm trying to help people. You know, I'm definitely not a woe is me person. And if I can do some good with what I do, you know, great. I don't know. That's what I'm trying to do.
What is your – so, again, all right, so let's wrap up here in a sec. So what is your message to – obviously, we discussed a lot tonight, metastatic
yeah.
breast cancer, inflammatory breast cancer, upgrading from stage 3 to stage 4. What is your takeaway? What would you like other women to learn from your experience who may or may even not have breast cancer? And then I have a final post question.
I just think that, you know, life in general is unpredictable. You know, just, you know, you could be going about your day, and then all of a sudden, hey, your boob is big. And it's, you know, just kind of don't, like, shy away from the changes, even if they're negative, because you can turn them around into something positive, and you can make a difference even while you're, you know, when you're fighting for your life, you could still be helping other people. And that's what we need to do. We need to, you know, band together, and there's strength in numbers, and we need to, you know, we need to weed whack our way through all the pink crap and get the message out there that, you know, it's not about awareness anymore. We're aware. It's about
right.
research,
right.
and it's about finding, you know, a cure ultimately. And the best way to do that is to share your story and put yourself out there and be willing to be studied and be a part of the change in cancer.
Well, you actually answered my last question for me. I was going to ask you, does pink matter? And you kind of said it does and it doesn't, right?
Right. I mean, and there are, you know, there's a percentage of the population where they just don't care. They see the pink and they're like, fine, it's, you know, it's breast cancer. And
right.
But if they donate because of that, then fine. But some people see pink and are just like, oh, we're so over it. Don't they have enough? And like, no,
right.
we won't have enough until we have a cure.
Right, exactly. Well, thank you so much again for coming back, returning champion Sephora Razor, diagnosed
Woo-hoo!
With stage 3 inflammatory breast cancer in 2012. Good luck with all your scans. Please keep in touch. We know you are very close to heart here in the organization. So good luck to you and have a wonderful fall and holiday season.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Sephora Razor, everyone. All right, Kenny, let's set up the news here.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Head on over to events.stupidcancer.org. That is events.stupidcancer.org, your one-stop shop calendar for all of our social and educational events happening nationwide. Something could be happening in your neck of the woods, and we certainly don't want you missing out. Meetups happening. New York, New York. Davis, California. Jacksonville, Florida. Raleigh, North Carolina. Anchorage, Alaska. And Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Cancer is lonely, and we've got a cure for that. Yes, we're talking about Instapeer, our free mobile app that brings instant, anonymous, one-to-one peer support to anyone affected by any cancer, including caregivers. Visit instapeer.org and sign up to join our beta testing community for free and immortalize yourself on the app as a beta squad backer with a tax-deductible donation of $500. That's instapeer.org.
All right, we've launched a newsfeed aggregator on Pinterest for all the articles, blogs, and stories we couldn't possibly have time to post on social media. Check out what we're reading 24/7 and don't miss a beat. Subscribe at stupidcancer.org/feed.
Cancer is expensive, and we're proud to announce cancermademebroke.org, a national partnership with GiveForward, the number one platform to start a medical fundraiser. Our very own Annie Goodman here at the Stupid Cancer Show did it, and you can too. You didn't ask to get sick, and your community wants to help you. Visit cancermademebroke.org to learn more and start your personal fundraiser today.
All right, it's always a good time to stock up on Stupid Cancer Gear. Visit stupidcancerstore.org at any time. Stay nice and cool with all new products and styles to choose from. That is stupidcancerstore.org. Be proud. Wear stupid cancer.
And
that
is
your
Stupid Cancer News. So it's my favorite time. It's like Christmas in October, but it's pink. I'm so happy to welcome back to the show the folks from Breast Cancer Action. Dr. Angela Wall is Breast Cancer Action's Head of Strategic Communications and Media Relations, once a university lecturer, online advertising strategic planner, and writer for an underground newspaper. She's always held an active and passionate interest in women's health and equality. And joining her is Annie Sarter, BC Action's National Campaigns and Policy Advocate Leader. Her activist background includes environmental and social justice campaigning to slow climate change, demand corporate accountability, yeah, good luck with that, and stand up for the rights of people most impacted by greed and inequality. Please welcome my two favorite people on earth, Dr. Angela Wall and Annie Sarter from Breast Cancer Action. Ladies.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Good evening.
It's like our anniversary every single year.
I know. It feels like that. How are you, Matt?
It's great. It's hard to believe it's been a year, but here we are back in Pinktober, and like I said, you guys kind of carry the big pirate ship flag for the entire month, and we always look up to that.
Well, thank you. We admire you right back.
Thank you. So let's start by, you know, every year we have all new listeners, of course, every year. So why don't we just get to the origins of Breast Cancer Action. The late and wonderful and powerful Barbara Brenner began this organization a while ago. Talk us through the history.
So Cancer Action indeed did begin almost, we're about to head into our 25th year. Next year we will be hosting major pomp and circumstance with lots of celebrations to celebrate our 25 years of presence in this world. And Barbara Brenner indeed was our first full-time executive director. She passed away last year, not from breast cancer, but from ALS, and, you know, was a flagship of how to take take control and how to demand change in the world right up till the end. And Breast Cancer Action actually began with about 8 women who were either living with or, you know, in late stage breast cancer, who were just sick, some of them quite literally sick to death of not having access to information, not really appreciating what was being done, feeling like not enough was being done to stop and address stop and end breast cancer, that not enough was focusing on prevention, that there wasn't enough kind of accountability in terms of drug treatments and so and clinical trials and who could get treatment and who couldn't get treatment. They had a social justice interest, and so that was kind of, it was like basically 8 angry women who just decided to take the matter into their own hands. And, you know, that is a kind of a core kind of component of this organization today, that what we do is we try to rabble rouse and we try to encourage people at a grassroots level to stand up, say enough is enough, and actually start making the call and making the demands for what we need to make some serious change. We're 30 years into this kind of pink ribbon BS, and what we see for it is a lot of corporations making a lot of money and very little really changing when it comes to the number of women and some men every year who are diagnosed with this disease.
So part of what I love most about you guys is you don't just walk the walk, you talk the talk, and you actually get things done. And too often people want to be advocates for change and they just march and do nothing and nothing ever happens and it's the same old thing every year. But you have had such incredibly successful shift-changing campaign efforts in the past couple of years. And I want to highlight a few of them before we get to what you're up to changing the world in 2014. I can't help but, and I refer to this all the time, the Yoplait fiasco incident of 1812. Can we talk about that?
Well, you know, Yoplait was, you know, what we defined a classic. We coined this great term, pink washer, which fabulously now you'll see all over the place. And so it's great. It calls attention to this lack of transparency and accountability when people slap a pink ribbon on it and on a product and then tell people, hey, buy this and we'll donate something towards breast cancer. And if you can see the amount they're going to donate, well, good luck, because usually it requires, you know, buying a boatload of them to make a dent. So Yoplait had this, what they thought was a fabulous campaign, Yoplait yogurts, pink ribbon on it. We're going to, you know, basically you had to eat like big 3 yogurts daily for like 3 months to actually have them send, I don't know, $20 to whichever organization it was they were going to support. And then lo and behold, we did some kind of, you know, looking around and digging around, and there we find that the actual dairy, the milk that they're using, actually contains the recombinant bovine growth hormone, which lo and behold has actually got serious links to causing breast cancer. And so this, you know, wait, hold on. So wait a minute, you want to support and stop women from being diagnosed, but at the same time you're going to make money from a product that actually contributes to causing an increased risk of the disease. And so we mounted this campaign. We, you know, stirred up our members, who it's very easy to stir up, and they sent letters in. We managed to contact General Mills, which is the owner of Yoplait, and within a few weeks they'd actually declared that they were going to stop using RBGH in the dairy. They were going to use dairy from non-RBH injected cows. And then lo and behold, a few months later, Danone followed suit, the big, you know, maker of yogurt, Danone. And then what that meant was like 2/3 of the dairy market was then RBH free, which was a huge win for us, because, you know, one of the great kind of platforms that we've kind of always championed is that we need prevention. You know, it's we're not going to really stop diagnoses until we actually understand what causes women to get sick in the first place. And so that was one of our very proud moments.
And the other proud moment, which we kind of have to mention, is when the Susan G. Komen for the Cure nonprofit had a perfume. And let's talk about that.
Well,
it's so worthwhile to discuss this.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. So Komen came out with a perfume called Promise Me, we, you know, and there's, regardless of, you know, we had the perfume independently tested. Lo and behold, it comes up that in the fragrances, which are, you know, fragrance is a nice little kind of closet of a term when it comes to trademarking, because you can actually put whatever you want in ingredients into a fragrance and call it fragrance, and you never have to tell anybody what's in there, because it's your trade secret, which makes your perfume whatever it is, or your product whatever it is, that's special to you and unique to you. And so we had it independently kind of examined by researchers and a lab. And lo and behold, they find out that, you know, in the fragrance are actually, again, you know, chemicals and toxins that are, lo and behold, linked to an increased risk of breast cancer. And even without this, you know, anybody who's been around, anybody who's had any kind of cancer diagnosis, who's going under any kind of treatment, knows that you are particularly sensitive to smell and you have heightened sensitivities. And so why the hell they would have made a perfume anyway that would make people going through treatment incredibly uncomfortable and add to this, you know, like there's not enough discomfort. And so it was ludicrous on so many fronts. And so the main issue for us was that it actually contained ingredients that were linked to causing the disease. And for Coma to do that just seemed absolutely too egregious to even believe. And so, you know, we love coming up with campaign names. So we launched our Raise a Stink campaign, and indeed our members and lots of people across the U.S. did indeed raise a stink. And Coman had planned to bring out a second iteration of this perfume the following year. Then we were demanding that they took it off the shelves. They said that they didn't take it off the shelves, but it dwindled, and we don't really hear much about it anymore. And they actually came out with a press release saying that, you know, we believe in our product, and other than, you know, and blah 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 blah. But the great news is that it stopped being something that they marketed, and we believe that they've stopped making it, even though they've never actually said that they have. But that would require a confession.
You get stuff done. That that's really impressive.
We do.
That things get done. So let's start with, so first of all, you've had the campaign thinkbeforeyoupink.org for a long time now, clearly one of the best rhyming schemes in all of advocacy. So let's start with that. And now clearly all these campaigns are falling under the umbrella of that, under breast cancer action. What do you got for us? I downloaded your PDF. There's a lot of amazing things on here. Let's get started at the top. What are your biggest efforts for 2014?
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, so this campaign is really building on our past success. You know, we've just talked about the successes that we've had in the past, about pinkwashing becoming a household word, people understand following the money, about pink ribbon marketing. We've exposed the hypocrisy. And this year we really wanted to take a step further and go beyond, you know, more than one product or one example, and in essence, take down the pink ribbon marketing and culture industry, because we see it as a big distraction. So this campaign tagline is "Stop the Distraction," and we see there being a number of reasons that the big pink ribbon culture is distracting. And they include pushing, you know, empty awareness trinkets that don't do anything or raise any money for breast cancer, spreading misinformation to women. There's a surprising amount of products that give women bad medical advice. pink ribbon products that profit off of breast cancer, corporations that are making money using breast cancer awareness slogans. We just talked about pinkwashing being one of the big problems that we see. And we also see pink ribbon promotions degrading women, reducing women to, you know, save the boobies or save the tatas, which we find incredibly offensive. And lastly, we're talking a lot about the tyranny of cheerfulness, or, you know, generally using pink ribbon campaigns to hide the harsh realities of this disease. So this campaign is about shifting from the the pink ribbon culture that is so deeply problematic and turning instead to action. So, again, stop the distraction.
Well, and clearly, yes. And I do want to go back because at the top of the show, we were discussing some of the more novel things that are happening this year that really didn't happen last year. Do you feel in any way, shape, or form that we may have hit a saturation point where the public is sick of this and now there's backlash and it's not having the same impact it used to have?
Well, you know, I would say, I would wonder what we mean by impact, because when you go to the origins of the pink ribbon was started by, I believe, Estee Lauder Company for the purpose of making money. Originally, there was a salmon ribbon that was started by women living with breast cancer, and it had a very grassroots origin. And that was very quickly co-opted, to be frank, as a corporate marketing tool. And, you know, I don't disagree that some women, you know, take solace and friendship and solidarity from the pink ribbon, and we certainly don't have a problem with that. We see the roots of the problem being in corporations using the pink ribbon to make money, to profit, in some ways to actually harm women. You know, with a number of examples that I just named, but, you know, one great one is spreading of misinformation about the disease. So, you know, I think that people can certainly get good things out of the pink ribbon, but I question its impact. Totally, from the beginning.
One of the efforts that caught my eye this year that you guys are working on is you're taking on Kohl's. Can we talk about that campaign?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're taking on a number. I mean, there's a number of the thing about this campaign is, you know, we come out with a campaign, and then we you know, for every campaign, the idea that we have is, you know, during the year, you know, during the months, like, you know, we basically start thinking about this in March, and for every idea that we can come up with, there's 100 more. And so whenever we launch the campaign, we always hear from, you know, women and members and people, just, you know, strangers, members of the public across the country, who are just like, you know, well, I saw this really pisses me off, or I saw this is degrading, this is, you know. And so one of the kind of the beauty of this year is that, you know, for each of these kind of offenses that we see that, you know, distract us from issues that will actually get us somewhere, is this, you know, there's corporate targets attached to it. So, you know, we're basically this year we're taking on the NFL, we're taking on NASCAR, we're taking on Kohl's, you know, we're taking on this huge conglomerate of an organization called Oriental Trading that just basically manufactures and turns out this pink tchotchke shit that's got nothing other than, you know, meaningless ways for corporations to sell these and kind of brand them to themselves and make money off them during this, hey, it's October, this is your chance, corporation, to make some money off those people who get sick from breast cancer. And so, yeah, Kohl's was, you know, this the horror of the original and the Kohl's campaign that came out this year was, you know, just the way they co-opted with their Pink Elephant in the Room campaign, which was, you know, basically a kind of a, you know, hey, you know, we're calling the Pink Elephant in the Room, you know, selling products to show that we care. And what was particularly horrific about this one was, you know, so, you know, Medivivor and the metastatic breast cancer community has long talked about metastatic breast cancer as the elephant in the room, and that, you know, because nobody in this full world of pink and celebration of everything pink, nobody wants to hear the story of those with metastatic breast cancer, because they're not the, you know, survivors, and they're not the winners, and they haven't beaten this. You know, they're the people who've, you know, despite the fact that they've tried really hard and had a good attitude, they have metastatic cancer. And so to kind of remove this whole story from their campaign and remove the connection between, you know, the pink elephant in the room and Medivivor and women with metastatic cancer was just horrific. And, you know, and it just ties in again to that idea of, you know, we have this perception that gets put out there with the pink ribbon of just this, you know, this happy, cheerful, perky face of breast cancer and just have the right attitude. And it just masks and hides that's not the reality, right? I mean, it may be the reality of someone who's in remission, and that's great. I mean, it really is fantastic, and we are not going to at all step on or squash or like shit all over the quality of life of someone who's in remission, because that's great. And there are people who aren't. And we need to not leave this entire segment of, you know, the breast cancer community out of the conversation. And that's what this Coles campaign was really doing.
Is there any federal involvement in the accountability of corporations leveraging this? I'm just completely spitballing. Has there ever been a committee convened or some type of oversight on why this is ethical or legal or moral or standards?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. People ask it all the time, especially when I tell people that I work for Breast Cancer Action. You know, they talk about pink ribbon products. And no, there's no certification body that decides who gets to use a pink ribbon to sell a product or for a promotion. And there's no standard, there's no oversight, government or otherwise. I like to use the example of a blue dot. Any company can put a blue dot on no person to decide whether or not they're allowed to do so. And the pink ribbon is like that. There's no mechanism.
It's not trademarked. There's no trademark around the pink ribbon. There's trademarks around the little kicking cure that Komen has. There's, you know, but that, I mean, that was the brilliant thing when Estee Lauder, you know, took this ribbon in the first place. All they needed to do was change the color from salmon to pink, and hey presto, they'd got a pink ribbon, you know. And there's no oversight. And then when there is attempted oversight, which happened in Massachusetts a few years ago, where there was kind of efforts to look into organizations that claimed to make contributions around certain, you know, campaigns, and you know, 501(c)(3) organizations or nonprofits had to register, I think 10 registered. And so there's no one, you know, the whole problem of oversight is just so huge and vast that even, you know, it's like any kind of regulation. When it starts to require people to sign up or release records or, you know, reveal what products, what chemicals are in their products, it's all on those particular organizations or corporations to come forward with that information. And half the time, it doesn't actually benefit them to do so, because they're going to lose a shitload of money if they do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly,
cynical self.
First, I love the fact that you call it Breast Cancer Industry Month and not Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I would never have thought to, you know, put those words in that order, but I think it sums it up pretty clearly. Were you at all involved, or what's your awareness of the 2011 documentary film Pink Ribbons, Inc.?
Yes, that is us. We actually had a lot of involvement in that film. So the film is actually based on a book by the same name, Pink Ribbons, Inc., by a wonderful woman named Samantha King. And as she was writing her book, she had many, many conversations with the late Barbara Brenner. And Barbara and she became good friends. And Samantha was, you know, just appalled at what she was seeing and uncovering as she looked at basically the corporatization and the profiteering around, you know, charities and philanthropy related to breast cancer. And so Samantha wrote her book, it got published, and then a fabulous woman named Ravida Din, who worked for the National Canadian Film Board, picked up the book, had been diagnosed with breast cancer herself, picked up this book and had been wanting to make a kind of whistleblowing film that kind of talked about where is all this money going? What is actually, what is all this pink stuff really doing to benefit women with breast cancer? And so put this film together, and, you know, Barbara Brenner was interviewed. She was part of it. We provided a lot of materials that were used and a lot of resources. And it's a great film with a lot of, you know, kind of very, you know, lifelong activists, women and men who've just been committed to pulling back, you know, this pink curtain so that people can see the truth behind, you know, these even the huge walks and runs and just how much money goes into producing and arranging them. And you just look at it and it's like, what could we do with that much, all that money? And it's all about, you know, it's basically a lot of them are about promoting the organizations that are actually sponsoring the walks and runs and the kind of, you know, the products and the, you know, the promotions themselves. It's, you know, these are corporations. These are for profits. A lot of the people involved in these kind of, you know, awareness campaigns and this promotion campaigns, and they're not in the business of women's health. They're in the business of making money, and it's the huge difference. And it's really important to remember that. And it's something that the film really highlights because it talks about Pink Ribbons Incorporated.
Right, and I think it's available on either Netflix or iTunes.
Yep.
Pink Ribbon. Yes, definitely.
It's very
worth
available. And if anybody
definitely
has trouble finding it, contact us. We'll put you in touch with it.
Do.
It's on Netflix.
You know, the anvil gets dropped every now and then. When you think about exactly how much money is raised in October versus there not being a Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and compare that number to how much funding there is from the government for breast cancer research, which is $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, does it matter is always a conversation. But the flip side is, well, every dollar matters. And if you have to spend two to make one, is it worth it? And, you know, so trying to take the devil's advocate side of the conversation here, what's been your response when people try to make good out of this, and does it really make a difference?
Yeah, I would say that our response is give directly and ask your friends and families and networks to also. I think we have a lot of examples of Pink Ribbon products that don't give any money to breast cancer, you know, concern about breast cancer research or otherwise. And some examples where they do, Kohl's is a great example of a tiny, tiny relative amount going, you know, compared to the amount of money that's being raised for Kohl's. And if people had just, instead of, you know, spending $50 at Kohl's and then getting a $10 reimbursement to use at a later date, which would then trigger Kohl's giving $1 to breast cancer research, give $50 to a breast cancer organization that you care about. Give $50 directly.
Yeah, I echo Annie's, you know, and I actually think, I go a step further and say, I actually think it does matter where the money comes from, because it usually the strings attached, and I think, you know, where the money comes from is, I think, you know, why it went when we need to understand how to help prevent this disease, and there's very little government oversight around, you know, say, you know, which chemicals or which toxins go into our products, when we clearly need, you know, stronger regulation around those kind of issues, then who's funding what actually matters. Because if it's General Electric and the manufacturer of, you know, the mammography screening devices that are, you know, that are funding a huge Get Screened campaign, no shit they're sponsoring, you know, it's their business. You know,
right.
But it's a very different question when you're saying, okay, so, you know, and this, you know, we need to get more screening into, you know, low-income communities or, you know, communities where there's very little access. Well, great, that's all well and good, screening, you know, low-income populations or women that don't have access or didn't have access to healthcare. But having a screening diet, you know, having a screening mammogram and getting a result is one thing. What do you do after with that result? What, you know, you have to have some kind of follow-up plan. So that's the kind of separation right there between what the corporation does versus what government healthcare dollars will do. Because, you know, this is that we need to treat the whole disease, not just the diagnostic part. And so I would say it does matter where the money comes from, and that, you know, this is the more that this is put on the backs of philanthropy and charities to raise money, the less the government will put to it and needs to. And, you know, this is a long history. You know, like we can go into the history of this back to Ronald Reagan when we started kind of privatizing and corporatizing philanthropy because there's people out there who are willing to fund it. And it matters. It changes what happens, who gets funded, what kind of research gets funded, who are the beneficiaries of the funding. It matters.
I also want to chime in that my elephant in the room is the genetic nature of cancer now, as we've been making all these radical new discoveries in drug development and immunotherapy, where medications for breast cancer aren't coming from breast cancer research. They're coming from general cancer research.
Mm.
So is there really going to be eventually a need to have disease-specific research? And that is a major conversation in the adolescent and young adult communities, because we're the ones that are now benefiting from all these genomic solutions that are irrelevant to what cancer we have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like personalized individual medicine. And this is something that we have been advocating for years. And again, you know, you follow the money and you start to look at why these practices get put in place, why these policies get put in place. And it's not to benefit the patients. So often it's to affect the bottom line of either big pharma, you know, research corporations, research labs, and 9 out of 10 of them are private.
So we have a few minutes left, and we can't not avoid the biggest elephant in the room, and I hate even the fact that we're giving them attention, but the KFC buckets for the cure gives me nightmares. And it's worth discussing, if only it makes people that much more nauseous about it.
Well, and also because then I get to say "What the Cluck," which was the name of the campaign. So yeah, you know, and that was again, you know, and it's again another classic example of, you know, hey, where the money comes from doesn't matter. Well, you know, so you know, Komen again partners with Kentucky Fried Chicken, and for every, I don't know, enormous bucket of fat, greasy chicken, although they did then insist that they were just talking about the grilled chicken.
Right. Yep.
They're all hormone boosts, you know, and there was some independent kind of farmers or physicians for fantastic food in Los Angeles who actually independently researched this, and lo and behold, yeah, there's, you know, these chickens are shot up with hormones that are actually, you know, bad for our health. And you know, one of the few things that we do know about breast cancer is, you know, staying healthy, you know, it's not simply about these things, but we do know that leading a healthy lifestyle and being able to, you know, eat healthy is something that, you know, can reduce the amount of toxins you get in your bodies. And that cannot be an across-the-board kind of recommendation for people, because we start to get into the issue of, well, who has access to healthy food? But I'm not going to go down that wormhole. You know, so the bottom line is, where are KFCs located? They're all located with easy access in low-income communities. So what we're doing basically with this campaign, what Komen was doing was, you know, perpetuating the purchase of unhealthy food, greasy fried food, in communities where issues of access to healthy food is already an issue, where health is already an issue, where obesity is already an issue. And then they're tying but we're doing this for charity. And it's just, that was just horrific and egregious. And we called it What the Cluck. I mean, because literally that was our response in the office, only cluck wasn't the word we used. And that wasn't the word or phrase that rippled around our office when we first kind of... And it was our members that brought our attention to that. We were starting to see it, and then the phone didn't stop ringing, and the emails didn't stop pinging in, because people were outraged. Rightly so.
Right. So I want to end on a positive note, because this is such a great conversation for the active activist cynic who is disrupting and challenging the status quo and not accepting what's happening. But let's talk about anything positive in what you're accomplishing, in terms of should we be in a situation where there's something pink in front of us? What have you discovered to be the good things that are out there?
Well, I hate answering this question. you know, there are. So here's, you know, something good that's, the money's going 100% to where it clearly states it's going, that's a reputable organization that you believe is doing the kind of work that it needs to be done, that the product itself in no way is linked to or, you know, increases our risk of developing breast cancer or any kind of cancer, that this is a company that's actually seriously has a mission to actually support women and support, you know, the health in all those kind of wide terms of women and changing and a commitment to change, you know. But the bottom line is, I would always do what Annie just said earlier. I write a check directly to the organization that you think is doing the best kind of work. And the other thing is, always check out our web pages, because I want to plug this campaign. We are trying to, with these fabulous Facebook memes that we're creating every couple of days, to really blast back against this pink distraction. And I just want to encourage everybody to go to the Breast Cancer Action Facebook page every day, share the hell out of it, share the cluck out of it, and get this message out there, because we're seeing this change happen. I spent my day today going through, looking at all the media where people aren't even connected to us or even knowing about us, and they're telling people to question pink ribbon products, to challenge, think before you pink, to be alert to pink washing. And that's phenomenal. People not even knowing about our organization and never referencing us, who are going out doing that kind of educating and have got that message. That's what 12 years almost of people behind these campaigns, you know, and people like the people listening to this radio show, the people who are our members, they're building a movement. And change happens when we demand it, and that's what started to happen, and we're seeing it. But we need to keep the pressure on.
Well, the website is facebook.com/bcaction or thinkbeforeyoupink.org. Correct?
Yep. Yep. And then one awesome last thing, if you're sick of all this pink stuff and you want to start your own campaign, Don't Pink For Me, go to our website, look up our fundraising page, and if you want to have your own campaign that's telling your friends and community to just bypass the pink, you can start your own campaign that's Don't Pink For Me.
God, I love to have you guys on the show. We've been talking to Angela Wall, Communications Director and Annie Sartre, Policy Campaign Coordinator for Breast Cancer Action. Ladies, thank you so much as always. Here's to next year.
Next year.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, Pinktober 2015, here we come. Thank you so much.
Okay.
So, Mallory, has any of your opinions changed, or you sort of still retain the same hostility that we enjoy?
Yeah, there's some hostility. definitely enlightening.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, the cynic in me would say, you know, clearly, and I like the expression, the person is really smart, but the public is stupid. And it's not a character assessment on any one person, but it's so easy to just think that you're doing good things by the slacktivist nature of consumption. And that's what the advertisers prey on. And people don't want to write a check sometimes. They just want to feel like they're doing something without even having the sort of the self-wherewithal of the authority responsibility to make sure that what they're doing is meaningful or valuable. And I if we can accept that that's just the way it is, I still think we're making lots of progress and lots of noise.
Absolutely.
You're nodding on the radio.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Any final thoughts, Kenny? Are you going to go pink?
Oh, yeah. Everything.
Gonna dye your hair?
I'm going to go buy several pink items. I'm going to get a pink garbage truck, perhaps a pink fire truck, and park them next to my pink house.
You have a pink house?
I will after the show.
Okay, great. That's the best answer in the history of the show.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's our show, folks. Speaking of all things pink, it is time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
Okay, folks, that's our show. Our 322nd broadcast. We hope you had as much fun as we did poking a stick at stupid cancer.
We'd like to thank our guests, Sephora Razor and Dr. Angela Wall and Annie Sartre from Breast Cancer Action. Next week's show, having children after cancer. For many young adults diagnosed with cancer, the fertility repercussions of treatment are often eclipsed by the primary objective of treating the disease. Join us as we talk with Gina Shaw and Shelley Nolman as we explore the options, risks, and tough emotional and psychological issues of having children after cancer. Survivor Spotlight on Jen Rackman. Subscribe to our show anytime for free on iHeartRadio, iTunes Podcast, and Blog Talk Radio. And check us out anytime online at stupidcancershow.org and stupidcancer.org. Remember, folks, if it ain't stupid, it ain't cancer. Live from the chemo deck, on behalf of Annie Goodman, Kenny Keene, Maureen Sweet, Mallory Rivera, myself, and our whole team here at the Stupid Cancer Show, thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here live next Monday at 8 p.m. Have a great week, folks.
Good night, everybody.
In this world, too many soldiers are serving multiple tours, so...